Hello and welcome back to the latest Culture Power Through Kim Ross podcast. In this episode, I'm back with Dr. Nikki Small and we're going to pick up on our recent podcast, Thomas Grain of Balgowan, Lord Lindock. So, Nikki, the last time we spoke, you were telling us about the small estate near Dalcrew, which Lindock and his wife bought, and the cottage that they worked on to make a home. But then she became ill, she died, and they never lived there. That's correct, yeah?
Yeah. It's Lindock. There's an E in the middle. I think he made that distinction when he was... Yeah, it's fine. Don't worry. I've always said Lindock as well, but it's Lindock, yeah. I think. Mary Graham was always frail and had TB. And then, if you recall, we were talking about how she died in France when she was trying to recover her health over there. And we talked the last time about her casket being opened by revolutionaries and the awfulness of that and Graham's reaction. So the journey home from France for Thomas Graham was very long and arduous. I think Mary's sister had also been out in France with them, and they had to bring a lot of things back with them. They travelled, obviously, and her her body was sent by boat, and he really was truly grief-stricken by his wife's death. Her body was taken to a family crypt in London, and he immediately set about building a mausoleum here in Perthshire for her body, and the place where he too would eventually be laid to rest.
So where is this? Can you still see the mausoleum?
Yeah, the mausoleum's in Methven Churchyard. It's quite grand, actually, and it was also designed by the architect James Playfair. He's quite famous. He did all the work on Edinburgh's New Town, and he did other work for Thomas Graham. And it's built in the year Mary died, 1792. He just throws himself right into this and builds this mausoleum. And I'd encourage listeners to look it up online, look up pictures of it. There's quite a bit written about it. And you can actually go to Methven and visit the church. It's right in the middle of the village. You can see into the churchyard. Sometimes the gates are locked. A lot of churchyards nowadays keep their gates locked. But you can get in if you request. And have a good look at it, but his mother is buried there. She's in the mausoleum. Mary Graham is there, and eventually Graham himself was laid to rest there too. So it's worth a visit.
Mm-hmm. So I mean, this obviously happened quite early on in his life. So what happened to Thomas Graham like after the death of his wife?
Well, that's the interesting thing for me. I find Thomas Graham's life is kind of lived out in reverse. He married quite young at 26, and he had almost, I think it's about 18 years or so of happy living like a country gent with his wife, this beautiful Mary. And then after her death, he cannot really find any peace in the usual pursuits. You know, he just doesn't want to return to that kind of life, and he doesn't want to live in the same places, which is quite, I mean, that's common when you're in grief. You know, you just don't want to pick up what you were doing before. It's not the same. So he actually lives between friends and talks to lots of people, and eventually decides he's going to take up a military career, which again is probably quite unusual. Most men in that period would probably go into the military as young men. They'd be younger sons, they wouldn't inherit like he would, and they would go into the military as younger men, and then once they've had their military career, they would marry and retire to the country. So for Thomas Graham, if you like, it's kind of the other way around.
So how does he get into soldiering? Like, what's the next steps for him?
Well, he just seems to really get involved. A lot of the books about Thomas Graham are actually written from a military perspective, because he has an amazing military career, and I am no military historian. So I would advise people, if they're interested in that part of his life, to have a good look. I was more interested in how his estates and how he was regarded locally. But if you're interested in Lindock from a military perspective, find some of the books. They're brilliant, and they're written by people who really know their military history, the military situation, the campaigns, and of course they review his life as a soldier, the tactics and his military conduct. But basically he becomes an outstanding soldier, and for Graham it's like a character trait within him. When he decides he wanted to do something, he just does it. That's it. He just goes for it. And initially, he actually just he became an aide to an officer, a chap called Lord Mulgrave. He just basically got involved. He met him when he was travelling, and he just kind of attaches himself to him. This is around 1793, and he basically makes himself useful, and generally starts to earn the respect of proper, you know, military men and soldiers. And then after this first experience, he returned to Scotland after that with the idea of raising his own regiment, and that's exactly what he did in Perth.
Okay, so Perth actually had its own regiment. How would you go about doing that then?
Well, it's very expensive. Permission, there's a formal process. You have to petition to do all of this. And Graham wanted to secure good men as officers. Now, remember, he's got estates in England as well, so he's not just quite doing this in Perthshire, but he's doing it all over. Got lots of connections. So he pretty much financed the whole thing himself, literally threw money at the venture. And he hired men to hire men. You know, he had people who were finding military men, offering them commissions, getting them involved. And obviously you had to pay them and uniform them, all the kind of things that you have to do. He almost failed to have his regiment authorised, though, because he really didn't fully comprehend himself what all the regulations were. The men had to be, so I believe anyway, the men had to be inspected twice in the course of a new regiment being formed. An inspection was needed when the numbers of men reached about 600, and if everything was going well, then you would inspect them again around about 1,000 recruits. So Graham continued to raise men, thinking that all that needed to be done was to report on the full number. When numbers were over 700, he was tipped off to get on and apply for an inspection. Otherwise, he would have had the numbers, but not the necessary certificates, passing out certificates. So he duly had the parade held in Perth. And the inspection of around over 700 recruits by that time by a man called Lord Adam Gordon, and he signed up all the documentation. And this is another great story about Lynduck. This is just him doing his usual adventurous things, because this man, you know, big dignitary comes and there's big inspection, and of course this would all be met with great pomp and ceremony in Perth and or dinners and sorts of things. But Graham actually decides that he will leave this superior chap, Lord Adam Gordon, and he jumps on his horse to get down to London and ensure that the certificate, the passing out, would ensure that his was called the 90th Regiment. Regiments are numbered. I don't know a huge amount about this, but for some reason... Mm-hmm. Graham didn't want 89 or 91, he wanted to be 90. So there was some confusion when he reached London, but the certificate passing out was awarded to him, and Graham was successful. So his unit was accepted as the 90th Regiment, the Perthshire Volunteers. So again, this amazing story that, you know, he just leaves his dignitary and says, right, sorry, I'm off, you know, I've got to travel and I've got to do this and sort it out. Yeah. I think that's part of his kind of gung-ho attitude in getting things done. But that's how Perth had the 90th Regiment, the Perthshire Volunteers, yeah.
Yeah, it's that old thing, if you want something done, you do it yourself type. And then so at this point, did he continue as a soldier after this?
Well, in various ways, yes. And like I say, I'll refer people to the books, because there's a lot to say about his military career. He served with his own regiment. They had a distinctive uniform. They became known, I believe, as Balgowan's Grey Breeks. But he was in various campaigns as a British commissioner. He was in Malta. He served in Constantinople. He rode there from Constantinople, he rode from there to Vienna, apparently on horseback, and always said that it was one of the most agreeable journeys he'd ever made. I mean, no mean feat, you know, riding all that way, it's astounding. He served in Spain, various, and then he had this brilliant victory at the Battle of Barossa, which is what I mentioned in the first, the streets named after him. And he came to the notice of Lord Wellington. So quite an incredible military career. He led campaigns in Portugal, the Pyrenees, Netherlands. And in 1814, he was raised to the peerage with the title of Baron Lynduck of Balgowan. And that's what I mean about the E in the middle. I think there's some letter again that spells that out, because somebody at one point leaves the E out and he says the name would be quite different without it. So he becomes Baron Lynduck of Balgowan.
Mm-hmm. That's probably a marketing officer based in Edinburgh that's mispronouncing that. So do we celebrate like everything that he did in Perthshire? You said like there's no home at Balgowan or at the Lynduck cottage. What can we see, like, really, apart from the dry arches at Delcroix?
Well, yeah, neither of these houses exists anymore. And again, if people are looking for more information, look up books and other things on Perthshire, and go to maps as well. You'll see the NLS map website's brilliant for looking at old maps and seeing where these places were. We've got some images. You'll probably be popping some online alongside this, but the dry arch is still there, as you say. But there are actually monuments in and around Perth. We have an obelisk on Murray's Hall Hill. Now, this is lovely too. If you go online and Google it and look for it and all the rest of it, you can come up with a lovely circular walk. It takes you from the cemetery in Scone through Scone Den and way up towards Murray's Hall, and you will come across the Llandaff obelisk. And that was unveiled around 1853 to commemorate his military career, his part in the wars. And there is another on the North Inch, just beyond the bridge. That was made by a local firm, and it has distinctive basins on the side, and they used to have water fountains into each one. And that one was unveiled in 1896 to commemorate the raising of his regiment, the Perthshire Volunteers, and the regiments that turned into. You know, they didn't stay the same forever.
Okay, so I mean, that's your kind of like outdoorsy monuments and bits and pieces like that. So I mean, is there paintings? Because Mrs. Graham, she had paintings, correct?
Absolutely, yeah. Now we've got the beautiful Mrs. Graham. She had all the paintings, but and I'm sure a lot of people will recall this when I describe it. But it hangs in the museum at the moment, and it's quite striking, the portrait of Llandaff. And there's another great story about that. I've come across an article written about the paintings, other paintings too. The painting was actually done by a chap called Sir Thomas Lawrence, and he was commissioned to do this because Perth had recently built the county buildings on Tay Street. And it was common then to place paintings of important local people in these kind of public places. So the Lord Canool of that time in Perth made an announcement that in due recognition of Llandaff's military service, his campaigns and all that he'd done, that they would commission a portrait of him in full military dress. And this announcement came just in time to coincide with Graham, now Lord Llandaff, returning in glory to Perth around 1814. And the article gives a very grand description of all of this, a dinner, a lot of celebration, and the painting was completed by public subscription.
So does that mean that the people in the city contributed to this?
Yeah. So a public subscription would mean people were asked to pay. And the popularity of the man was evident in that they had to cap the subscriptions, as they felt that they would raise the money very easily. So people were only allowed to subscribe, I can't remember how much it is, 3 guineas or something, because they wanted everyone to be able to say they contributed, so they capped it. So people could only subscribe a set amount in order to let everyone join the scheme. It's a very fine portrait, and there were reviews of it when it was unveiled in 1817, because it's only announced in 1814, and then they commissioned the artist. And Llandaff apparently knew him and was happy to go and sit for him. And one newspaper said it had characteristic energy with beautiful warm colour, which is probably quite true. But Llandaff was, well, you can see from the portrait, as I say, he's a very handsome man, and the painting certainly does capture his looks and that kind of spirit that I was talking about. But one reviewer was prompted to state, and this is it, commenting on the style: "It has more than once occurred to us that the artist Sir Thomas Lawrence fits a pair of pantaloons on the thigh of a general officer in much better manner than the best tailor in Bond Street." So I love that. So I'll let people see the painting for themselves and decide on the fit of Llandaff's breeches. Very, very entertaining.
Yeah, and we've used it today for today's Dougie Draws when the podcast has gone out. So that's the image we'll be using today for that. So what happened to Llandaff then in his old age? Did he settle in Perthshire?
Well, he's a very robust character, and he kept generally in very good health. He never married again, although he was a great fan of female company. He had a great many admirers and close female acquaintances. He was a great confidant for lots of ladies, and lots of letters apparently between him and women. He's very popular and was always in demand socially. So when you know he could have lived with all his friends all year round and never lived on his own, you know. He was always invited, and he was a great hunting and, you know, shooting, fishing sort of character as well. So he was an MP, and then he sat in the House of Lords, so he took part in civic life as well. The only problem he seemed to have was trouble with his eyes. That came up, and eventually he appears to have had a successful operation to deal with cataracts, and this allowed him to get back to pursuits like horse riding and hunting. And he also remained really active in looking after his estates and that kind of improvement that we talked about that he was involved with earlier. He's very interested in breeding horses, and he also introduced different breeds of cattle to his farms. So he took a great interest in that. He seems to have lived mostly in his English estates, but he spent part of the autumn every year here in Perthshire. He travelled abroad to enjoy the warmth of different sunnier climes in his old age, but he died at his London townhouse in 1843, and he was 95 years old. Wow, 95 is quite a great age, and just so much achieved, you know, just amazing achievements. He had a very simple funeral, though. And at his own request, he just wanted things to be very simple. And his body was taken by steamer to Dundee and then to Perth and through the Perthshire countryside to the wee village of Methven and the famous mausoleum that we spoke of. So he was finally laid to rest with his mother and, of course, his beloved wife, the beautiful Mary, Mrs. Graham, the beautiful Mrs. Graham.
It's such an interesting story as well, and an amazing character, and it's kind of, it gives you, I hope it gives the listeners like lots of ideas for places to visit around Perthshire to, you know, to do such safe country walking, which are related to him. So I think we'll maybe follow this up with posting some images of the mausoleum and the different bits and pieces around the area on social media, just as a sort of follow on to this podcast. Okay, Nikki, thank you very much again for your time. This has been the Culture Perth and Kinross podcast. It's a regular podcast from Culture Perth and Kinross, the charitable trust that looks after the museums, libraries, archives and galleries in the region. We have a Book Hero campaign running at the moment where for the donation of £7, you can support Culture Perth and Kinross and help us give our services the best start that they can get when we reopen. The link for that is in the episode notes. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a review on iTunes. These really help raise the visibility of the podcast. And we'll see you next time. Bye.